You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Scott Dolan. Scott, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hi, thanks. It's good to be here.
Scott, let's talk about your work. You're in Brooklyn now. I imagine that's where your studio is. What are you working on at the moment?
Well, I guess at the moment I'm working on, I mean, I always work on works on paper, paintings and drawings. And I do some photography too, but I think mostly I consider my artwork to be more the drawing and painting. So I have been most recently doing some paper gouache paintings that are of a pile of pencils that I received as a you're an artist, so take this guy's stuff. I think it's a guy who died who was a designer, and he was described as an uncle, but I don't even, you know, he's certainly not someone close to me, but they're kind of these interesting old graphic tools, and so I started making portraits of them. And they kind of feel like a strange kind of elegy in a way, I guess, for this guy, Ray, I don't even remember his name, Ray DeVita, I think it was. Sort of that's the most recent work, and that's things that are kind of slowly
showing
along.
What kind of tools are they, though? What does that mean? Like, what kind of tools that you're, and you're doing, these are, you're making portraits with these, you said, right? Figurative work.
Right. So it was sort of presented as, we have some Bristol board that maybe you can use. And I said, okay. And I went, and there was, you know, obviously a guy who'd been a working artist and designer for a long time, and it was just boxes of, you know, pencils of all different types, kind of these strange rapidograph pens or just even like regular colored pens that you might use in an office or something like that. And he'd kind of labeled them all in a strange way. Like a lot of them will say like pearl, you know, he's with scotch tape and paper on around the end, it'll say like pearl paint, June 15th, 19. You know, 91 or whatever. And so he had kept everything very organized, and they'd been used, but then he kind of had a lot of them. And there are also things like, you know, little designer tools like little protractors and rulers, a ton of rulers, and some really nice old pencils that have to be 50 years old.
Wow.
And things like that. And some he had sharpened in a very peculiar way. He clearly used a knife or razor rather than, you know, a pencil sharpener. And they kind of had a very human feeling to them. And so I thought, well, let's zoom in on them and make kind of like tight paintings of them to kind of honor this kind of junk, you know, that kind of fills up our houses and doesn't get seen until it's in someone else's house maybe. And so that's what I've been thinking about a little bit lately.
And how is that? How are those tools? I mean, because there's such kind of a whole world in there. How are those tools affecting the work you're doing now? Does it change what you're doing?
And it's, I mean, historically my paintings have been pretty loose, really, and it's in watercolor. I started out as a watercolor painter, and that's kind of does what it does. And then I started using gouache and kind of realized I could control it more. I've never been able to handle oil paint, but I can kind of deal with gouache for some reason. So they kind of get tighter and tighter, and as you know, you kind of make a painting about whatever it's going to be about. You kind of use an atmospheric way to describe something or whatever. You can kind of fake it, but these kind of had to be, I thought, sort of tight because it had to be a real look at this thing. The other thing I thought of when you first asked that is that sometimes I actually use the tool in question, like say a pencil, to do some of the drawing in there, so there's a little bit of itself in there. I guess kind of like when Kiss put their blood in the Kiss comics books that Marvel made in the 70s, something like that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, that's funny. Wow, so tell me a little bit more. I want to talk also about your some of the early work you've done on paper, the comic that's been reissued, but tell me a little bit more about these paintings. So what are the size of these, and are they all figurative? Are they all literally portraits of friends?
Yeah, they're so far they're just pencils, and I think that eventually we'll get to other things, but the pencils make kind of like a just a simple exclamation point right in the middle of the frame. They're 18 by 24 sheets of paper, like a watercolor paper, and then it's sort of, they're suspended in a, well, I photograph them right first, so they're suspended against velvet or whatever, so it's a kind of a matte background, no real information.
So the images really are, I mean, of these tools and kind of an homage to this man or this way of working or the
Yeah, a kind of way of thinking back to not only whoever this guy was, and I haven't found out too much about him, but, you know, as sort of this life of the artist, they kind of feel like, you know, standing portraits in a way, I guess, but they also kind of are floating in space and kind of quiet, I think. I think they look that way. Surrounded by kind of a dark, you know, matte black. And there's little, you know, there's character in there, and there's kind of I like the idea of that something mass-produced and completely generic, really, like there's some straight-up, like, number two Ticonderogas in there. And then I've always kind of, I don't think this is anything new, but this idea that you take something mass-produced, but it's a certain one. You know, this it's not any Ticonderoga. It's just one particular one that was used over this time and then kind of discarded or stuck in a box, and then here it was. It was one thing among many. It's identical in a way, but in other ways it's got its own history and life to it. And I don't know if that's particularly deep or anything, but it kind of feels
it feels interesting to me because it's true. Like, what happens with all these things when they're left, especially artist tools that that have so much, I don't know how to say it, but it's not that there's so much life to them in a sense that they've been used so much. It's kind of like a worn shoe, only there's more purpose in it almost, you know? So, I mean, I suppose there is a lot in the shoe too, but, you know, with a tool that's been used to make work, you know, if you believe that kind of, well, even if you don't believe, I suppose that there's some of us in all the objects that we use. There certainly is.
Well, it's certainly, you know, a distinct physically. Signature. Yeah. It's physically, you physically touched it, so it's kind of in a way. And I was kind of like that. You know, I think it's a little corny, but like, you know, maybe like Tom Friedman, 1,000 Hours of Staring piece or something, or people in grad school are always like hanging a sheet up somewhere to gather the energy from this or that or whatever. And I think that's kind of goofy, but I also think there's something to that. It feels like, you know, there's some sort of part of us that believes those kind of energies exist, even if you don't really quite believe it. Which I put myself in that camp, but it's an interesting thing to, I don't know, see if it does anything, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, there's certainly objects we have around, or that I do, that, you know, that was my mother's or father's or someone that I knew, and the object itself is somewhat mundane, you know, whether it's like a cooking pot or something not so much, like a little carving of my grandfather's, but for some reason it seems to have a lot more power or meaning than a photograph of them, for example.
Right. Right, I guess it's all like a, you know, the image, that's interesting, and it's interesting to kind of imagine yourself in that place, but then to actually feel a physical object that relates to a human body or something like that, especially as a something that maybe if the person is gone or something. And you kind of know it more intimately in a way, or just the way that it relates to your hand or something like that. You kind of, I don't know, it feels a little different than an image. I think you're right.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you have a history of working with paper. Should we talk a little bit about Slight Headache Comics?
Sure. So that was a project that I did kind of at the time I was working with oil paint, or attempting to work with oil paint, and doing these kind of large paintings that were, I guess, kind of abstractions, but sort of weaving in elements of you know, the daily life and whatever thoughts were going on, but they became, they were a big blur of nothing in a way. So I never quite knew how to, I think it's probably a problem with the, with just the oil paint itself, that it could do so much that I would be unable to choose any certain direction, and it became kind of a blur of nothing, I think, in a way. So what I would do is sit down and did comics sort of to get one idea or another idea and see if I thought these things kind of worked as a theory that could be made into a painting. And there was a kind of slight, like, actual economic thing that I was, it was the summertime, and my whatever stipend I had from school had run out. I was unemployed, and I actually found myself, you know, out of money pretty much. And I realized, I thought, like, well, if I can sell 10 of these, and this was in the 90s in Iowa City, it felt like, or whatever it was, whatever calculation I made, I thought, if I could get like $10 out of this a week, that would actually probably, that would make a difference in that economy. So I, you know, made a 25. So I started doing the drawings that I was doing, little quick things. Just, you know, gridded out a book, a piece of paper, and tried to come up with, you know, 28 ideas as quickly kind of and as offhandedly as I could, in a way to like throw them out and see what stuck in a way. And then just sold them at this video store in town called the Tofu Hut. And, you know, it kind of worked in a way. And then it really became, it's one of those things where you do something like that. It doesn't really seem like much, but then people kind of actually laughed at some of them, or, you know, thought that they were interesting. And so then it was like, then that became more interesting than the paintings in a way, although, you know, supposedly they were to serve the painting, but then they were became their own thing, and they were got a bigger response, I guess you might say.
So tell me about the process for these a little bit, because these are very small, right? We're talking about like a zine, a comic,
right?
That's, smaller than a business card.
Right. It's a, yeah. So it started out as a 8.5 by 11 sheet divided in, what was it, 32 images. You know, just sort of break it up in the only way that you could break that up.
Which is folding and folding and folding again so you end up with...
Right, so it's like finished thing is, what is it, I think the finish is 2.8 inches tall by whatever a quarter of 8.5 would be. 4 1/8, is that? I don't know. And so that's the finished size of the thing. And that, yeah, they're little like pocket things that cost a quarter, you know, it's like... kind of the easiest thing I could think of to do design-wise, and that would be easily reproducible at the local Kinko's, which is exactly where they were reproduced. And then
you made editions of these, of what, like 50 or 100, or you just kept making them till they didn't sell
I think
sell
the
anymore,
first kind of? One I probably made maybe 100, probably not, and then I went and I did like just called True Love Tales. So I did little hearts on the cover and did a little watercolor coloring on, and sort of, you know, thought that was kind of it. And then that's kind of like did okay, and then I kind of did a little bit better each time. I think toward the end of it, I was making usually 300 and maybe even 400 or 500. It probably wasn't 500, but I did about 300 of each one. And I couldn't tell you where most of those ended up. I know I wasn't certainly selling out that run, but... They would kind of go all over. I'd give them to friends. I had a lot of mail art stuff. In those days, you know, people would mail things back and forth. And I have, you know, tons of zines and stuff. So there was a lot of whatever that
right,
zine
so this
was
a mailable made, format, too. This is very simple to mail.
Sure.
It just pops in an envelope.
Yeah, you'd drop it. Yeah, you could drop, like, four of them in there for 2 stamps or something. Yeah. And so it was, you got, like, a lot of discourse with it, you know. There was a lot of, it was fun to like be part of like people talking about these things or talking about mail art and talking about meeting other artists with, you know, interested in similar things, whatever those things might have been, and to have people like the work, which is, you know, is always nice. It felt like the more serious, you know, 4 by 6 foot paintings I was doing were not getting we're getting mixed reviews, let's say. And so, you know, it was good to have like that. And then, you know, I made like probably $40 out of that deal. And then a couple of years ago, a friend of mine who runs a small like press that's interested in doing art books and things like that said, why don't we do like a thing? So we made like a box set of that. So that was an edition of 100. And that was like...
Well, that's what's really unusual. I saw that box set, and it's kind of beautiful. You know, you have all these teeny little editions. I think there's 20 of them in that box set. Is that correct?
Yeah. There are two that I never really finished. Like when I went to New York, I was working a lot, and I just never finished two of them. And then I had meant to never stop, but then I just stopped. And then I did a brand new one. So I finished the two that weren't done and did a brand new one, bringing the total up to an even 20. And we did like a little silk screen sleeve for the set, and that was a lot of fun and was really cool to do.
That is cool.
Yeah, and so.
There'll be links in here so people can look at that, order them if they like. I also want to just ask before the last question. So then there's back to your paintings. You're making these paintings. You're in Brooklyn. Are the paintings going anywhere? Are they being shown anywhere? Or?
I did have a show at a gallery called Happy Lucky Number 1 in Brooklyn. That was even a year and a half ago or so now. A couple of them were in that. But no, it's so far that they don't have anything coming up. But I would hope that sooner or later, that, you know, a big enough mass of them could be in a show somewhere, even just a few that are around now.
In terms of the zines, unfinished ones or other things, will there be more of those? Or
I hope so, yeah. I think so. I've started that, but again, it's like nothing concrete yet. There's still some left of the box set, we've made more than 100 for the 100 edition. So the ones that are imperfect, I will sell at cover price, so which is a huge markdown from the expensive box set. But just if people wanted to see what they were, I'm happy to sell like for basically the cover price, just to see what they are. I don't have all of them anymore, but most of them are still around, not those 20.
Yeah, I love that idea. I love the idea of the, especially since they're so small, and even the motive, you know, to make a little cash, because it's obviously so little cash in a way. But in terms of like getting your art out there, it's also a very convenient way to get drawings out into the public. I mean, I talked to different artists in different ways that have done something like that. Some, you know, involved in mail art, others not. But nevertheless, you know, copying and binding with a staple or whatever it is to get them out there seems like a pretty nice way to get work out into the general public too.
Yeah, and it kind of relates to the other thing I was talking about, that every single, you know, drawing, scan, print, fold, staple, cramming into a box, every bit of that was done by me with my own hands, you know, and so it has that kind of closeness in a way too, I guess. I don't know. It sort of looks mass produced, but it's not really mass produced. It's very, you know, personal in a way. So I kind of like that about it too, you know, which is like a real mail art thing too.
Yeah, I like that too. So Scott, let me ask you one more question. What are you reading at the moment? What are you looking at?
The last thing, I'm blanking on the woman's name, but so, was like a copy editor for the New Yorker, and she wrote a book about traveling to Greece, and it's called Greek to Me, and it was like just a book about her travels and her interest in the Greek language. And that is the last thing, that's the last book that I read, and it was pretty interesting, but also kind of light. And that, I think that's, as far as books, that's the last thing I can say I got through. And I try to get most of my information from the coded messages in the New York Times crossword puzzle, so I think that's the thing. That's the literary thing I pay attention to the most.
Well, Scott, thanks so much for talking to me today. I really appreciate this.
Thanks a lot. It's been great.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.